Hi, Michelle. Nothing. Whole lot of nothing. Whole lot of silence. You were good for a while when we were first talking. Now I just feel like I'm talking to the wall, Michelle. Talking to the brick wall. Might as well just go off to the bar and get a cream soda and a whiskey. No brain cells wasted. This would be a good way to do a podcast. I'll just go through all my notes one-sidedly. No, I'm not going to do that. Anyway, I can't hear you, so you might not even be able to hear me. I might just be insanely ranting into a void. So, maybe I'll text you. Or maybe I'll do this. Maybe I'll try to message you here. Still nothing. And I have sound. I have other sound on my computer, so somehow it's this Skype connection.
What about now?
Oh, now I can hear you. What'd you do?
I changed my Skype microphone setting, but why would I have to do that? It worked fine last night.
I don't know. Could you hear me the whole time?
The whole time. You were sounding perfect. When I first started talking to you, didn't. When I first started talking to you, sounded, you were breaking up. So I thought it was that something in my headset. So I unplugged my headset because I still had both headsets plugged into it. And I got rid of Mike's headset on it and plugged it back in. And when I did, then you couldn't hear me at all. So
well, I am Michelle.
Unqualified. Yes.
This is unqualified. The law of non-contradiction. I don't know if that had anything to do with your headset or your microphone.
I wouldn't doubt it, would you?
But did you figure out on West Coast Project for Fargo, Law of Non-Contradiction, episode 303, Mike and Michelle, did you figure out what that means, Michelle?
Yeah, kind of, right? The law of non-contradiction is that A cannot be both B and non-B at the same time. It's like how one thing can't be something and then not be something, right?
Okay.
Is that what you got out of it?
Yeah, but what about the episode?
Well, yeah, we see that a couple times in the episode, don't we? With the story that the guy, Paul, I think his name is, tells Gloria about how someone's married, but they're not married.
Yeah, the contract of divorce, and if I come back, then we're still married the whole time, and if I get killed and don't come back, then we weren't married, and you're free to be single or whatever, divorced.
Right, right. So she's both married and divorced at the same time.
Yeah, and Gloria is kind of that now, right? She's married and, well, not really divorced yet. She's talking to that creepy cop.
Yeah. Gloria has a lot of kind of shaky things in her life. A lot of things in her life happen. Ennis was kind of her father. He was her stepfather for a little while. You know, I mean, she has stuff like that. She's kind of the chief, but she's not really the chief, or she didn't know if she's the chief. A lot of big things in her life, her marriage, kind of married, but kind of not married. That seems to be like the little sticking point with her. I'm not sure where that's coming from or where we're going to go with that, but
what about the box? Kind of open, not open anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. A box that you turn on so it will turn itself off. I really want one of those.
That was brilliant, man.
I loved it.
You know, for however much I keep saying how I hate supernatural sci-fi, I loved this episode with the animation and stuff.
Did you? I was wondering. I couldn't. I was trying to get a feeling as I was watching the second time of how you would feel about it, because we didn't have any VM Varga in it. You know, we didn't even have any Stussy brothers at all. And so I was really, or no Nikki. And so all your favorite characters, and I know you like Gloria too, but all your favorite characters, most of them were not in this. And I kept thinking, is Mike going to like this or not? Because it was, to me, I think you used the word maybe last time, but quirky. And it was the perfect quirky Fargo episode.
Yeah, I was talking about music, I think. What did I call it? A word you never use except for Fargo. Jaunty.
Jaunty, that was the word you used. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, but so quirky. Everything about this, there's so many things that are put in this series that have no reason to be there. You know, I mean, they are masterminding it, and I understand that, but like the Santa Claus convention. You know, just something to throw something so off. The one thing that you don't picture Santa Claus is sitting around a pool getting drunk.
Yeah.
I mean, you might picture him in a lot of situations, but they put him in the completely opposite of where your mind goes.
I think that was another non-contradiction. It was like, Santa Claus, Mom, there's no such thing as Santa Claus. But wait a minute, a hotel, they're surrounded by him. They're freaking playing poker at the pool.
Yeah, right.
Like they are, but they aren't. They also, right. I love this part of this episode where they kept referring to No Country for Old Men. That hotel and pool were just like the pool in the hotel where, what's his name, walked past the girl with the beer and she said, hey, come on, have a beer with me. And he's like, nope, I'm just here on business. And one beer leads to more beers. That looked just like that same scene in No Country for Old Men.
Oh, wow, I'd forgotten about that. That's pretty good.
Also, when the guy Zimmerman bought Enos a beer or a drink, not Enos, I guess at the time it was, what's his name?
Thaddeus. Yeah.
He's like, buy my swinging dick a drink here. And in the No Country for Old Men, he calls them swinging dicks. He calls guys.
Them. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I didn't remember that either. Good catch.
How about the mother? So we got your scene of your picture of the girl that you were talking about that I missed in the first episode.
Right.
The pretty girl from 1955 or whatever. 1970?
Right.
75?
1975. Yeah. Vivian Lord. Yeah.
So that girl and her older version were played by a mother and daughter. A real life mother and daughter.
You know what? When we were watching that, Mike said, I can't believe they found this older woman that looks so much like the younger woman. So that's really cool. He'll like to hear that.
Some pretty cool music, too. There was some nice luncheon music like we had with Cy.
There was, yeah.
Yeah, Silver Bells. And we had some cool Santana and some other Three Dog Night. Some cool, timely music.
Yeah, they usually do that. And then in episode one, they just got, you know, kind of crazy, kind of out there with it.
So we find out what happened to Enos, Dennis / the D off Enos, Ennis, whatever.
Boy, we sure do, don't we?
Why he moved and when he moved. I guess it was the recap kind of version of this episode, but he moved to Eden Valley in 1980. And Gloria brought her talents west, man. She came to California. She got quite a welcome when she came into California.
She did?
Yeah, with the traffic and the dating scene and the hotel check-in.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, it certainly didn't look very glamorous from her view of it.
Didn't look like Eden Prairie.
That it did not.
Probably hardly happens there. Hardly ever happens.
Right. Now, was it 1980 when we moved? How do we know that? I don't remember catching that.
It was in the previous Leons before the start.
Okay.
Somehow they said it or... Yeah, I think...
I thought that's when... Okay. I thought maybe I heard that's when he married Gloria's mom. But this is 1975 when we start. And I don't think a whole lot of time goes by, right? Maybe a few months. Maybe a little longer.
Well, before. Yeah, the awards dinner and stuff. I think it is right at the time of 1975.
Well, yeah, they actually had it on a big banner. The Golden Planet Award of 75. So, I mean, I guess it could have been 76 if they're having the award of 7, but, you know, it's right in that time.
So it starts out at that dinner. Thaddeus the teetotaler, turned into Enos the drunkard, man.
Or the drug addict.
Oh,
was
yeah,
he drinking?
Both.
Yeah.
He was drinking nothing but cream soda back then, Michelle, and then he's... pounding whiskey off the shelf of his store in the middle of the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you mean when he's older. Yeah, you're right. And it makes you wonder if he took that up, you know, continued with his addictiveness as soon as he went to Eden Valley, as soon as he left L.A.
His addictiveness, Shun?
Yeah, I was going to say his addictive nature, and then that didn't sound right, so...
His addictive nationness.
That's it, yeah.
His addiction. So, yeah, so he meets Howard Zimmerman, who sidles up to him at the bar and buys, get this swinging dick a drink. So yep. he's a mover and shaker, pretending to be, anyway, a movie producer. And he wants to
Can we talk about how sad that was, though?
Which...
I mean, the whole thing, it was like in this... smoky bar and there was like four people left there and it was all dirty looking. You know how clubs look? Have you ever stayed like when they turn the lights on? You know, you can be like in a club and everything's so kind of cool looking. I'm probably dating myself terribly, but you know, the lights are flashing and everything, and then for whatever reason the lights get turned on, you realize you're just kind of like in this pit, you know, and it's just disgusting. And that's kind of what we saw with him. He's sitting there and he's got this beautiful, you know, meaningful trophy in his hand, but there's only like four people left sitting around. Like the drunks are the ones left, and he's sitting there just in this pit. And it was sad, even as it was, you know, a celebration of him.
Well, one of those people that walked by at the very beginning was a guy in a space suit. And I'm like, oh, geez, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be bad. This
You're
is
right.
going to get bad quick. But yep. It just turns out he was probably an extra at the event to make it look sci-fi-y.
Right.
But it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool the way this whole thing went. So Zimmerman wants to make, I don't know if he's just scanning this room for suckers, but he finds Thaddeus and sidles up to him, and he wants to make Planet Y into a movie.
A major motion picture, yep.
And I like the colloquialisms of the time. Like Enos said, hold the phone. You want to make my story into a movie? Like, hold the phone. Wait a minute. Like,
right.
It was a big deal to...
Right.
Did I hear that correctly?
Right. And like when Howard Zimmerman said, you're the cheddar. You know, meaning you're the cheese.
You're the cheddar, Boobala.
Yeah.
Calls him Boobala.
I know. Pretty funny.
So another person in that room, Michelle, is your girl, the girl that Gloria...
Oh, was she in
Gloria
that room?
Had the picture of. What's her name? Dawn? No, Vivian, right?
Vivian, yeah.
Vivian's picture, yeah. She's at
I didn't notice that. That's pretty cool. I didn't notice her picture was in that room.
I'm sorry. I jumped ahead to the next scene. He's at the screening of the movie.
Oh,
she's in that room.
Okay. But as they walked out of that pit, that place that they had the thing, is where the newspaper guy comes up and says, you know, he wants to make a picture, and he makes that picture, and that's the picture that Gloria finds in there. So that was pretty cool too, that we actually saw the picture being made that she found in the firebox.
The picture being taken, snapped.
Being taken, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so the whole time Howard's pumping up Enos / Thaddeus to make him confident that he's a genius at this screening, he introduces him to the girl. Hey, meet the genius. Here's the genius behind all this. He's
right.
just playing him up.
Well, yeah, and he's absolutely like pimping this girl out, right? She is what is holding Thaddeus's attention. Thaddeus wouldn't have stayed there with just Howard, no matter what the promise was, I don't think. But when Vivian comes up and, you know, does the cross the legs in your direction and the kind of big-eyed, doe-eyed look at him, that was kind of all it took.
Yeah, and he's like, well, Howard's I've got saying, money. Don't worry, you know, he's worried about his expenses because he stayed 2 weeks or something longer than he thought.
Right.
And Howard's like, don't worry, just keep the receipts. Like, I'm going to, you know, this is all paid for, this expensive hotel, we'll take care of it. But it's all coming out of Thaddeus's own money.
Right. Right. And he acts like he's on the phone with Warren Beatty.
Yeah.
I don't believe that, right? That was just a schmooze. That was just, he's just talking into that 1970s style bent corded phone to be impressive, I think. To Thaddeus, yeah.
He's going to make it into a space opera. Like, Planet Y is going to be a space opera.
Right.
Which somewhere if we compare the timing of Star Wars and this is all right at about the time Star Wars took off. So I don't know if space opera and space came to Howard Zimmerman's attention because of Star Wars being big at that time, but it was right around that 76, 75, 76, 77 that Star Wars came out.
Yeah. It's also funny that we're doing this on May the 4th.
I've heard that all day, and that's the dumbest freaking joke.
I know. It's pretty bad, but it is funny, though, that we're doing it today on, like, Star Wars Day or whatever.
Yeah, not that funny.
Okay. But we also find out about Zimmerman and that he's like 3 times divorced and he's saying he's tapped out and all that kind of stuff. So he's telling him, I don't have any money right now, but we're going to make it big.
Yeah. And he's explaining to Ennis the business, like you got to grease palms. You got to find all these avenues for money to do this stuff. This is just how it works, baby. Boobala. So
right.
Ennis / Thaddeus has all these pressures working upon him. The money, which now he happens to have a little bit of, the pretty girl, and then this guy who's supposed to be a big shot just telling him, don't worry, money's not a problem, this is how you do it.
Right.
So he gets him to sign over his book advances, and crazy.
Well, right, because Thaddeus doesn't really have any money anyway. All he has is his advance for his book, I assume a book, whatever he's writing, and that's all he has. So this is an advance that is it the advance for the screenplay? Is that what that money was? Because he'd already written the book and he won the award. So this was an advance for the screenplay, correct?
Yeah, I guess so. He's probably, you know, and he's writing more books. So he had the successful book Planet Y and he's probably writing more books. So he's getting advances for stuff he's doing.
Okay.
And I'm sure some of it was the screenplay for Planet Y.
And then we cut to him writing check after check after check, you know, 5,000, 5,000, tearing off these checks. So we, you know, you kind of get the feeling at that point that they're taking advantage of him.
Yep. And they're doubling down by Vivian saying, oh, the drugs make the sex amazing. And she's getting him to buy drugs and using drugs and having sex and all to this really cool Santana music, which was so timely, just stitched it all together.
Yep. And they also run into room 203 when all that's going on. You know, when she's talking about coke makes the sex amazing. And then you see them run toward the hotel room. And it's room 203, which is the same room that Gloria got put in.
Yep. And we're going to see why that's important. Now, she maybe not had to be in the same room because they probably all had the same toilet. But pretty interesting.
It was really interesting. Yeah, I agree.
So I also liked how Thaddeus still worked hard, even though he was like under the debauchery of drugs and cocaine and alcohol and sex. He still got up in the middle of the night and typed out his stories.
Right. Yep, he did.
From Small Dreams, Civilizations Arose. One line that they showed us.
Right.
So, Michelle, then we get the robot animation. I actually like this. I thought it was a girl robot at first when I heard the I can help.
Right.
But it's actually a boy robot named Minsky.
Yep.
And Minsky was the MIT scientist credited with artificial intelligence.
Oh, cool.
Some guy with the last name Minsky.
Yeah, but they couldn't have known that way back then, because this was like 2.3 million years ago, right? So it's coincidence.
Exactly.
Okay.
So now some people are saying that they hear Ewan McGregor's voice in the first human, the master of Minsky, when he dies in the very beginning of the robot scene.
Oh, was it?
Did you notice that's Ewan McGregor, and that the very last person that talks to the robot when he switches his head off is VM Varga's voice.
Oh, that's good. I don't know.
I didn't catch it myself, but I've read that. So it was kind of cool how they had Gloria reading the story aloud. That was all in her voice, so that was neat.
That was neat, yeah.
And they show us what she's actually doing. She's on this plane reading the book, and this guy Paul is how she meets this guy Paul, who questions her about what's that book about? What's it all about?
Right. Is that a typo in the title?
Yeah. And she tells him it's a robot seeking the meaning of life.
Yep.
So, Michelle, why do you think, what's with the robot and the meaning of life? And this is not just a stupid Jetsons thing. It's kind of a profound search that this robot's on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I really did. I thought about this, and I'm just not sure. Of course, I could relate it to other things, but I'm not really sure how to relate it to Fargo. Did you come up with anything on it?
Well, I guess Fargo has always had kind of the search for the meaning of life with the fables and the parables and the religious connotations and stuff. And I guess this is kind of interesting with, I don't know how to attach the human meaning to it in the story of Gloria, but, and Enos and all this stuff, but it's a cool little thing to think about. Like, this robot stuck for, what, 2.3 million years. He sees civilizations rise and fall, and he kind of loses hope and gains hope. And I mean, it certainly makes you think about stuff.
Yeah, and it was a very sad story, though. I felt a lot of empathy for this robot, right? He was pitiful. First of all, he was stopped, like, at a mental level, or I don't know if that would be the right word, but before he could become smart-ish, before he could become adult, they said that he was like a child, and so he never really got a chance to experience life, and I guess he wouldn't anyway, that sounds stupid, but as an adult, and he was just pitiful the whole time. He was nothing but helpful, nothing but taken advantage of, and then just kind of on the outskirts, walking through, being an observer to everything. And then in the end, there was no fanfare, right? Everything he had learned was taken, and the last thing he did was switch himself off.
Yeah. All he wanted to do was help people. Do you think there are any, can we tie any analogies to Enos getting kind of, or Thaddeus, I guess, getting kind of bamboozled by these people? He was kind of a nice guy, but he got tweaked and twisted into what he became later on.
Yeah, maybe. We don't really know enough about him, though, to know if he was a nice guy or not, right? I mean, he could have been like a total terrible person.
He seemed like a nice guy, though. Just nice guy drinking his cream soda and never bothering anybody. Polite.
He did. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe. I really did try to find some relation to this Minsky book, this character and his story, to what we're doing. But I just wasn't sure. The switch at the end, where he opened his head and switched it off, looked a lot like that switch that Gloria found in the closet.
Yeah, in the box, for sure.
Yeah,
that was
box.
Definitely a connection.
But other than that, I just had a real hard time connecting it solidly with the story that we're telling. But maybe later.
How about the people on the plane howling? Like, the background of the soundtrack, it was people howling. Like dogs on the plane as they kind of panned away from the plane seats.
Yeah.
People are animals. The world's a wild wolf. Wolves in the wild place. What did that mean?
Your guess is as good as mine. I mean, there's so many sounds in this, and I've really started taking more notice of it because you do and you bring it up. And so I've really listened to the sounds, and we see stuff just constantly, the dings and the whistles and the whooshes and just all sorts of sounds. So I don't have any idea. Maybe just relating people to wild beings.
Yeah, we had kind of the Malvo and the wolf thing before.
Yeah, we did.
Wolves, and he was a wolfish type of person.
Yep.
I don't know, but they didn't make them sound like wolves, though. They made them sound like people pretending to be dogs or wolves. You could tell clearly they were people howling.
Sure.
All right, so the plane lands in L.A., and Gloria gets a rental car and then immediately experiences the best L.A. has to offer, Michelle. Traffic.
The traffic, mm-hmm.
Like, we see some traffic. It looks pretty slow. That would be pretty bad. But they pan over, and she's in even slower, bumper-to-bumper, going-nowhere traffic.
Right. But it was a great cinematography shot, though. I mean, they never fail to amaze me. I know I say this almost every episode, but they never fail to amaze me with their shots in this.
She's tracking down the people in the old newspaper photo, and to remind us, she opens the manila folder and shows us the article again.
Right.
And at this point, I had to remind myself that she was even a cop. No, she was just wasn't the person going to California for a trip. She's a cop. She's doing something as a cop.
Kind of. Yeah, she is. That's certainly why she was there. It wasn't sanctioned, we find out, you know, in any way. But she is. She feels like it's important.
So she ends up at the Hollywood Premier Motel, Michelle, with a smell and a Santa convention.
What more could you want?
She just tries to be a nice person and get a damn room, and the guy assumes all these negative things about her. Like, okay, you need a room by the hour?
Does she look like somebody who would want a room by the hour?
No, she looked perfectly nice. She looked clean cut and nice and polite and Minnesotan.
She did.
But it's an ocean room. Oh, by the view of the ocean? No, smell of the ocean when the tide's low.
It just sounds horrible, right?
And then a guy runs up and steals her suitcase, an elf. What the hell?
Of all things. That's what I'm saying. Could you tie any of this Santa Claus into anything? Or is it just like the quirkiness, just like the so out of place that it fits into Fargo?
We pointed it out in episode one that it was, what, December 5th or 2nd or something. It's getting moving up onto Christmas, so who knows? Why not have a few Santas hanging around playing poker?
I guess. You'd think those Santas would be busy at the mall.
Now, but I thought we saw some Santas later on, maybe when they came back to them, or maybe it was this scene. But I thought I heard some ambient sounds in the back, like, give me those panties. Like, they were playing almost strip poker. It was very debauchery type of scene. You know, it's the sounds. I'll have to go back and listen again.
Yeah, that's even worse.
It was like strip poker by Santas in public out by the pool.
It's horrible.
So a cop comes to investigate the stolen suitcase right out of the damn lobby, too. It wasn't like she left it on the curb by the car. It was like right out of the lobby.
No, but she chases him down. Did you see that? She's not scared.
She tried to.
Right.
And she tells the cop it was an elf with green pants who stole it. She asked the cop, and besides all this, could you help me out a little bit? I need to make connections with some stuff. And cop kind of looks at her like she's crazy, and then she tells him she's a cop.
Yeah, Officer Hunt. What'd you make of him?
Oh, he was a piece of work.
Yeah, he's a peach, right?
He makes fun of her accent. Right away, you start to think, that's not that cool that he's kind of making fun of her. Is he just teasing her because he likes her? I mean, it made it look like they were making a bit of a connection. They're close to the same age. He's pretty attractive. She's attractive. You know, they're both cops. Why not? Give them a chance to connect.
I definitely gave him the benefit of the doubt in that scene, because you would be a little standoffish about somebody who comes in town and goes, somebody stole my suitcase, which was full of flannel, which was so funny. It's like, would you really go to that much trouble even to get it back? But that, on top of, you know, I don't know, just that connection that they seem to have in that one scene right there. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, then he's kind of aloof. Like, that was kind of cool, kind of romantic-y, that, okay, well, maybe I'll see you later if I ever find your suitcase. Like, are they going to get together? Like, you kind of wanted them to connect again after seeing
right.
that.
Right.
But, oh boy, we see what happens. Gloria goes into her room, and right away she sees a bunch of weird shit. She sees shoes under her curtain facing out like somebody's behind the curtain. She whips aside the curtain. I guess it's the closet. It's the curtain
closet
in front
curtain,
of the closet.
Yeah.
She whips aside the curtain and sees these shoes just sitting there empty, of course. And then the box was there. Now, what is up with this box? It was very awesome, but what the heck?
That's what I'm saying, the quirky. The shoes never really related to anything. The box, other than just the Minsky at the end pushing the switch. Well, I guess the box is kind of like the title, right? Because you turn it on so it will turn itself off.
Yeah.
So I guess that was kind of something, but what an odd thing to find.
Well, and then she brings it home with her, so we may not have seen the end of this box.
Right. I bet that box has a name. I bet it's called something. Yeah, I should have done that.
She calls her son in Minnesota, who, interestingly, Michelle, has been pulled over in the school bus by Donnie, the other cop, who stops the whole set of kids from getting home just so she can call her son.
Oh, is that what had happened there?
Yeah, he pulled over the school bus with his cop car, and
because she went to talk to him.
Yeah, I guess he gave. I guess
Nathan his phone. Yep.
Nathan her phone. She left her phone or whatever. Donnie gave his own phone to Nathan.
Yeah, I think he handed his own phone to Nathan.
All right, but this is where there's no such thing as Santa comes up. In light of him getting a new Xbox.
You know what? Let me just tell you, that is the crappiest thing to do to a parent at Christmas, like right before Christmas, to go buy a kid a gift that the kid's been asking for, that the parent might be getting the kid for Christmas. It's just the worst. It is the absolute worst when people do that.
So this,
not that an Xbox isn't nice, but
this is the gay stepdad has jumped in front of Gloria and gotten the present that Nathan wanted.
Right, the big present. I mean, the Xbox is a big present, particularly back in 2010. And she's a little upset about it. She's like, well, I guess I have to tell Santa, you know, because, I mean, you know she's gotten it already, probably. I mean, you get it more than a couple weeks ahead of Christmas, right? So you can have it wrapped under the tree and everything. And it just stole her thunder.
How do you know that the stepdad knew that she had already gotten him one?
No, I don't know. But I'm just saying, if you do that kind of stuff to a child before Christmas, like a kid who's asking for a specific big gift, and then, you know, you go ahead and get it, and then somebody else comes along. We've always had issues, not with the big gifts, I don't guess, but with stuff like that. You know, the girls would want something for Christmas, and I'm an early shopper, so I'd buy it early, and I'd already have it and have it under the tree and stuff, and then somebody else, they have all their Christmas parties and get-togethers and stuff with other family members and stuff beforehand, and somebody else ends up getting it, or people go in together and get it. And then you got to come home and, like, dig it out from underneath the tree. I actually had to do that this year because it was going to be upsetting to somebody. And anyway, it's awful. That's awful. And I completely understood how she felt with that situation.
What kind of Christmas ship are you running out there, Michelle?
I don't know. Not a very organized one.
All of that seems like such tomfoolery. Like even Donnie, or not Donnie, but whoever the new stepdad
Dale.
It's like, who cares? Just okay. I mean, I could see why Gloria's away from home. She feels a little hurt that She doesn't get the pleasure of giving him that gift. Just get him something else. Return it and get him something else. It just doesn't seem that big of a deal to me.
Well, it's not so much, except if the kid wants one thing, you know, and you've planned to give it to him, and then somebody else gives it to him.
Yeah, but how can you be, that's my question, how can you be upset if the stepdad does it on purpose, like, I'm going to one-up her, I'm going to do it before she can, that's bad. But if he has no idea...
Not at all. I don't think you can be upset. It's maddening, but you can't be upset about it because somebody cares enough about your kid to get them this gift, right? It's actually very precious. I guess I seemed ungrateful and ungracious when I was saying what I was saying, but what I mean is that, you know, you have went to all this trouble and you want to give them this gift and you don't know somebody else is going to do it. And then somebody else does it. And it's all really, honestly, it's all really, really fine. But when they do it before Christmas, you know, Nathan said, it's an everyday gift. You don't have to wait till Christmas or whatever. That feels kind of like he's trying to jump the gun on her or something.
Sounds like you got to do what I do, Michelle. Buy all your presents Christmas morning or not at all. I agree with you, though. The stepdad had to know that somehow Nathan had communicated that this was one of his prime A-level gift wishes and had probably told his mom about it. And he didn't consult with Gloria. The stepdad just went out and got it. So he probably knew. If he didn't know for sure, he probably had a good idea.
Well, and gave it to him early. That's the thing, too. You know, he got it early for no reason. It wasn't even like a get-together or anything. It wasn't their family time together, their Christmas time. He just gave him a gift for no reason, which makes giving a gift for a reason, like a holiday or birthday or whatever, seem less, right? Because, well, they just got me the gift for no reason. I don't know.
Well, this is not Gloria's only problem, Michelle. Donnie tells her the new chief is angry that she went to California unauthorized.
Yeah, she didn't have permission to go. Dang.
So this is like a chief from another town coming into a chief with another town. They combine forces, and all of a sudden, one of them's the boss over the other. It's like,
right? I think she pointed out that the county absorbed her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she didn't know even last episode. Am I the chief or is he the chief? You know, and it sounds like maybe even now she's still not quite sure. He's asserting his authority, but it's still not crystal clear, I don't think.
Well, right, but remember last time he told her, he said, take a few days off. And, I mean, this is still in that time period. They haven't even buried Ennis yet.
Well, she's doing that, taking some time off.
Right. I'm surprised that he was coming after her like that.
So she tells Donnie to go back and tell him that I've seen the ocean and it's wet.
And yeah.
This confuses old Donnie a little bit. He looks down at the phone like, huh? He's baffled by this.
Yeah, she's basically telling him to kiss her butt. It's none of his business what she's doing.
Yeah, that's funny, though. What is the meaning of that?
Right,
Chief
right.
Gloria? All right, so I'm back at the Christmas music at the restaurant theme revives itself very clearly here. This time it's Christmas time in the city where Vivian is the waitress. And she can barely remember 35 years ago. Michelle, she's been sober for 29 years, but before that, not so much, not so right. Sober.
Before that, it was basically a dream.
Thaddeus Mobley, blank in her mind, a dream, yeah.
Yeah, we know better than that, though. That's not true.
But she shows her the picture, and then she turns around, and on the wall, there's another exact same picture. So there's a million pictures of the one that this photographer snapped back in 1975.
Right.
So back at the hotel, this is where the Santas are playing poker. Outside at the pool, this is where I think I heard you owe me your panties. I got to play that again. I wish I had it here. I'd play it now. But
well, right. And she was looking at him really funny. Was that the guy maybe who stole her suitcase or something? Maybe it was her panties.
No, I don't know.
Because she stopped and she got out really really looking at him funny. I was wondering what that was all about.
She gets to her room, though, and her suitcase is returned sitting on her bed, and it's a candy bar wrapper and a note that says, suitcase empty, glass half full, buy you a beer, and a phone number.
Yep.
So it's an invitation from a super cop, Mr. Studley Cop.
It is. Yep.
So she goes to meet him, and he turns to the bartender at the bar when she walks up, and he says, I'll take two beers. Do you want
and
two beers?
And he's already got two beers. Yeah. I mean, it's what's with the two beer
so
thing?
That's a very Midwestern thing, even though they're in L.A. here. Yeah, it's kind of a Midwestern thing, like two for one, but happy hour, get two for the price of one. So they literally give you the two drinks at the same time.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it looks at first kind of romantic, like, oh, he's ordering a beer for her. He's being kind of male, not chauvinist, but male chivalrous almost. Like, I'll buy you a beer. Why are chivalrous and chauvinist so close when they meet?
That is a good question.
Trip me up right there. But, yeah, I'll take two beers. Hey, do you want two beers? Like, what the hell? So he was just thinking about himself the whole time. Very Midwestern. You get the two, and you got to take both the things. You don't get one, and then when you're done, you get the other one. You got to get them both at the same time.
So you better get that first one down, or your second one's going to be warm, right?
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird, stupid happy hour thing. But all she wants, Michelle, is I want a diet pop.
Right.
And he says, oh, a diet pop. He makes fun of her accent again.
Yeah, and it feels a little more sinister this time.
Yeah, now we know.
Right. Now right. And he tried to friend her on Facebook. He keeps bringing up Facebook.
Yeah, and Facebook she again, Michelle. I think my Facebook hating theory is alive and well.
Okay, what's going on with that?
Somebody thinks Facebook is really stupid. I don't know if it's Noah Hawley or the Cones. Probably Noah Hawley because the Cones are older and they were around before Facebook. But I don't know. I think somebody must think Facebook is such a joke that because in the bar too, isn't everybody doing a text message? Is that this scene where everybody's doing text messaging?
That was in the diner right before this scene when she was talking to Vivian, met Vivian. Yeah, everybody at the bar was sitting there with their phones in their hand, not interacting with anybody around them.
Everybody but Gloria.
Right, who was sitting there with her piece pie.
But what's the cop's name?
Officer Hunt.
Okay, so he's fascinated by Facebook, and he's now clearly an idiot. An idiot, misogynist, chauvinist.
Yes. And not chivalrous. Well, kind of chivalrous.
No, not chivalrous.
Is he a chivalrous?
This is the second time we've seen
chauvinist?
Facebook. Find these sons of bitches on Facebook and reel them in.
Do you know people that won't have a Facebook, though?
Yeah, I know people like that.
Okay.
And he has tried to friend her on Facebook, but she doesn't use it.
No, but he keeps on so much. He will not let this drop until she says she'll check it out.
Well, he's fascinated that he's found somebody who avoids using Facebook.
Yeah, he doesn't like it. He doesn't understand that at all. Of course, you know, I don't really understand it that much either.
He has 352 friends on Facebook, Michelle. And he actually met a chick on Facebook that turned out to be a Nigerian man that wanted money.
I imagine. Can you imagine that?
So this guy has destroyed all possible romantic connections by us, the audience, between him and Gloria.
In the first, 40 seconds that she's there, it's done.
Right. Now, Gloria, to me, in this whole episode, maybe this whole series, but even especially in this episode, I just noticed more and more, she's extremely cute, she's very funny, and she's extremely sweet. She's nice and kind to this guy who's making fun of her. She doesn't call him a dick, even though he is a big dick. He could have been very nice and helpful to her, but he's just a jerk to her.
She also, I don't know if you noticed or not, but I mean, she didn't have her flannels, right? And she didn't have her police uniform. So she had on these really, interesting shirts and stuff. So, yeah, I thought it really made a difference in how she came across. She was much softer and more feminine, I think.
I noticed one point in this episode where she was wearing the motorcycle shirt.
Yeah.
I'm like, why the hell is she wearing that motorcycle shirt? Maybe it's because it's L.A., but then I kind of remember that her luggage got stolen, so.
Right. She probably bought it at a gift shop or whatever, right?
Yeah. So this guy says, I got to go drop the kids off at the pool. And she's like, oh, you got kids. Finally, something redeeming in your shitty personality. And he's like, nope, I just got to go take a shit. What the hell, Michelle? Why do you even announce that? Too much information.
And to put it that way, too, to be so crude. So I don't know. I mean, and we also have to assume this is his impressive self, right?
Oh, yeah. He's dropping the lines left. He's trying to impress her. For sure.
I mean, this can't work on women, right?
If I were a woman, I would not want to hear it or be impressed by it.
Well, she asked him if he checked out the Thaddeus Mobley story, and he says he found nothing, but he didn't even remember. So I don't even know if he even looked. Do you?
He might have only looked on a cursory level just because it was a way to connect with her.
Right.
I think he was more interested in connecting with her above anything else and didn't care at all about anything she wanted. Or that's why I said he had a really good chance to be really nice to her and helpful to her. She's in a strange city. She's not used to it. He has all the resources. He could have really helped her. And she might have slept with him. I don't think Gloria would have, but who knows? I mean, she might have connected with him. But you do not go about it the way he's going about it.
No.
So he goes and takes his kids to the pool, and the airplane guy is there.
Yeah, Paul Moran, he's there. Just happens to be there. That's pretty cool.
What about this coincidence? This is a stretch of a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, it is. And I wasn't really sure why. I thought maybe we might see another connection or something meaningful behind it later, but I don't think we did. But he kind of saved her from Officer Hunt.
Kind of saved her and kind of ingratiated himself into the story a bit, because he now makes this parable about the soldier going to war out of nowhere.
Right.
Freaking nowhere. It's got no context, got no fit into the sitting at the bar next to the guy.
Well, he asked her if she were married or divorced, and she kind of stammered about it. And that's kind of what led into the story. But now that's a good story, right? And it's charming, and it's I don't know. I mean, it's meaningful, right? You hear this and it's thoughtful. You're going to think about it when you hear somebody talking like this. And it's just such a contrast to Officer Hunt and his crudeness. I thought it was really good.
So Officer Dick comes back and tells Paul to move along. She's mine. And then he turns to her and says, I'm going to cut to the chase here, gorgeous. Am I getting laid here or what? And Gloria says, what?
What? That was right. Great. Yeah.
Nice job, yeah. Gloria.
Yeah, she pauses for a second. And I mean, it was just, I didn't know what she was going to do, you know, throw her soda at him or what. Now, I thought for some reason that she was long divorced. Why did I think that? Did you?
She made it sound like she was married for 5 years ago or for 5 years or something and then separated or something with five.
I thought that was Ennis and her mom.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. I got the feeling, since his dad had a boyfriend, I just got the feeling that that was something that probably they separated and then, you know, that came out or came up or whatever. It just didn't dawn on me that she wasn't even actually divorced yet.
Yeah, it is weird when a heterosexual couple, one of them turns homosexual and reveals that they're homosexual and gets into a homosexual relationship. I don't think you come back from that. Like, you don't wait to see what happens. You get divorced right away. You don't hope it turns back into the romance and marriage again.
No, I don't think that would, you know, I don't really know anything about it, but I can't imagine that being something that you could work out in some way.
So anyway, when Gloria says, what is it? Am I getting laid here or what? What? And I thought that was kind of funny. Like, they could have ended that scene on a comedic kind of upswing.
Right.
But they don't, Michelle. They show Gloria's face, and she's painfully affected by all this. Like, not because he's leaving and because this dopey guy was mean to her, but I sensed in her some profound disappointment in humanity. Just like, how can people freaking be like this?
Well, yeah, and then he says, thanks for the beer. So he walks off to leave her to pay for the bar tab, right?
I don't know about that, but just her...
Oh, I think so.
Well, even if it was true, that she's not sad by that. She's sad just by the... God, the state of humanity that this guy... Is this what I'm in now? Is this the single world that I have to navigate through?
Well, yeah, I mean, she was trying to find some way to connect with him. She was asking him if he had something that was meaningful to her, right? She was asking him if he had checked up on the Thaddeus Mobley story. And then she, you know, thought he had children. So she was trying to find some way to connect with him. And then she just figured out, I guess, that there was no connection. And then it just even disintegrated from there.
It's selfish. Like, he doesn't even come back and say, hey, do we have a connection here? We're going to have sex or what? Like, we could have said, he says, no, am I getting laid? Am I getting what I want? I don't know. She's just profoundly disappointed by this. And more than just the crudeness of it, I think it's an insight to, like, humanity. Like, just very disappointed by what had happened.
And I imagine that would probably be a lot different than her interactions in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, I guess. But I guess what I'm saying is she's not just like, oh, here's another ass. You know, a girl now would be like, oh, right, loser, get the heck away from me. And she'd just write it off and move on. This sunk in deeply with Gloria.
Right.
She was affected by it more than she probably should have been.
Right, right.
All right, so she gets at the hotel. There's another note for her. This time it's Mo Damick, get your ass back home. And she's got to try that box switch again a couple times.
Yeah. Yep.
Just to make sure it's still working, I guess.
You'd have to do it, right? But I was talking to the family about that. Every time you walk past it, you'd have to flip it, right? Even if you were alone.
But there's more close-up of Carrie Coon's face. There's more sadness on her face, just like the look she had with the stupid cop. Like, just beaten down by the world look on her face.
Well, you know, you can certainly relate that box to that, right? Like, you try to do something, you try to get something done, and something comes and stops it. Something comes and turns it off.
So she kind of lays back on the bed, and she's kind of thinking, and you can kind of hear her, like, sniffling, like she's starting to cry a little bit. And then she turns the light out, and she dreams, right? She dreams of the android again, the Minsky.
Right.
And from small things, bigger things arrive, from amoeba to man. So he kind of sees civilization growing and crashing. Sees pyramids and almost like the Ozymandias. Like, no matter how great you can become, it's going to crash. And then the next guy's going to be great, and he's going to crash. And cities grow and go away, and centuries pass, millennia pass. And I guess they make the message that every century, Minsky has to get recharged, and during the time that he's getting recharged, he's vulnerable.
Right. Vulnerable to attack while he's recharging, correct.
So they make a point of saying that, and they show him getting harmed by his guys around him tearing his arm off while he's getting recharged.
Right, like some bullies coming up, and here this little guy is, I can help, you know, and they're ripping his arm off.
Right, so I thought that was interesting that they did this in Gloria's dream while she's sleeping. Essentially, when we're sleeping, we're recharging, right? We're vulnerable, and we're kind of recharging our battery.
Okay, that's good, yeah.
So is there some analogy that Gloria is maybe this Minsky that she's endured through all this? I'm not putting her on the time scale of the millennia and surviving rise and fall of cities and powerful things, but...
But who knows? She can't open a door. Yeah. Cell phones don't work for her.
Right. And she's worried. This little thing is worrying her. She read this in the book, and it's coming back to her while she's dreaming, while she's recharging, and she's vulnerable. I don't know. There's something there, something I can't figure out, but it seems to be there.
Yeah.
All right. She goes to the Writers Guild now and rings the bell with the longest sustained tone hold. Of any bell.
That definitely plays on your bell ringing theory in this. I swear they have to do that to be mocking, right?
Well, they did that. I think it's Barton Fink or one of the other Cone movies. They did the same thing. So it's another Coneism. So the dreary woman asks if Thaddeus was in the union. Like, who cares? I'm just here to find out about the guy. She doesn't know if he's in the union. Then comes back with a screenplay.
The woman also says that that the Writers Guild doesn't represent book writers. And Gloria goes, well, that seems like an oversight, huh? I mean, she just, like, has this best personality. I literally laughed out loud when she said that. And, you know, the woman's just interested, was it union? And, I mean, and Gloria looks like she's almost asleep in that chair before this woman comes back.
Yeah, the comfiest chair in the world in the hallway, in the middle of the hallway, just for no reason. This really nice, overstuffed, comfy chair.
Right.
Didn't fit. It was like incongruous. I wonder what that meant.
Well, maybe they know you're going to wait a long time when you go there to get some information.
So she gets the screenplay, and the planet Y is spelled the more typical way, W-H-Y. It's correct, I guess. If the other one is incorrect. Yeah, it's planet W-H-Y.
I didn't notice that. I actually typed it out differently on my notes.
So it dissolves into a scene in the old folks' home where she's visiting Howard, and he's there old as dirt now. He's old as hell.
Yeah, he is still there. But on that screenplay, it says that it was produced by Howard Zimmerman. So we definitely know that he had this contact with him, and this is how she finds out about him being in the nursing home. I mean, finds out who he is, yeah.
That's good to point out. So he needs a talking assistant thing on his throat that...
An artificial
limb. I am Howard Zimmerman.
Yeah.
And he just wants to be left alone. He has nothing to say to her. Doesn't remember Thaddeus Mobley, or at least claims not to.
Right.
Although in the next breath, he says he was a failure, so he does remember him.
Right.
Then Michelle asks her if she knows about science and starts to describe quantum physics and particles moving in space. And they move around in space and don't mean very much until sometimes they collide and become real.
Right.
So we've seen this happen in this series so far, right? The collision of a few things that would have meant nothing at all. Like Maurice would have never, ever crossed paths with Ennis.
Right.
Without a collision of accidental, I don't know what, just fate. And then it had big meaning after they collided.
Well, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So who else is collided? We have Maurice and Anna. So who else has collided like this so far?
Well, not really in a collided way, but kind of. You know, we have Nikki and Ray, and they don't seem like they really fit together either. But, you know, this they've come together, and it's pretty meaningful, and a lot of stuff has happened because of that.
Yeah, that's a good one. So the jerky cop and Gloria kind of collided over some stupid non-reason, just the stupid suitcase getting stolen.
Right.
What about Paul and Gloria? Paul, there's got to be something to Paul on the plane.
There does, right? I mean, are we going to see him again? Is he going to come back up? Because that was weird just to see him like twice like that see him again. Yeah.
Got to. Just the plane thing was interesting, but then he's in the same... they're in Los Angeles, man. You could go to any bar in Los Angeles. How many tens of thousands of bars are there?
Right.
And he's there?
Right. So, and also thought it was really, really... I don't know. I mean, I guess it's believable, but it's really coincidental that that hotel was still there, right? Because, I mean, this was like, what, 35 years ago that this stuff went on? I mean, a lot of stuff changes in 35 years. You don't picture some hole-in-the-wall hotels are still around, you know, but not a lot. So I think she really got kind of lucky with that. Not that that's what we're talking about here, but I meant to point that out earlier.
Or maybe even the toilet would change.
Yeah, you'd think.
You don't keep a toilet for 35 years.
Same dang toilet tank in there that they've had for 35 years. That's pretty bad.
So Zimmerman says, I used to think all this meant something, this collision of particles, but don't let the door hit you on the way out, baby. Boobala. And he just dismisses her. She leaves with her motorcycle shirt.
Did you notice that a big picture of him was hanging outside his door? Like a big photograph. Yeah, that was... It's funny.
He also had some weird name of his studio that was a new name, like Pontification Studios or something, above his bed behind him.
Right. Was that him? Because I didn't even...
Well, it has to be. It's in his room above his bed.
Yeah. Okay.
Studios. Yeah. It's not like the last guy was a movie director. I don't know. I think that had to mean something. I didn't bother looking it up, so sorry.
I think he's been there, though, right, for a really, really long time. I think he's been there for the 35 years.
Yeah, they said he had an accident. He was going to be a vegetable, but he got better. But the accident is the caning over the head, right?
Right.
All right, so back to the android, Minsky.
Yep.
He does more watching civilizations rise and fall, going through hope and despair, people scavenging and scrimping. Until
and this
one
is
day,
Gloria sleeping again. Yeah, she's dreaming this again. You're right.
Till one day, the spaceship gunmen come, and they start shooting people. They drop down onto the planet, shoot people, and they zap the Minsky android up inside the ship. And then she's awakened from her dream of this by a note being slipped under the door.
Yep.
Call Vivian Lord.
Right.
Oh, that was interesting. So then we see the flashback to Thaddeus and Vivian and Howard, I guess. And they tell him essentially, look, we admit it. You've been worked. Be a big boy about it. Your money's gone. We used you, asshole. That's the world. It's a hard world. We did you a favor by teaching you this. And then Howard kind of gives him a Japanese necktie and chokes him from the back.
Right, because he won't leave. He won't just listen to him and, you know, go away. And Vivian's called him a piggy bank, and she's mocking his love for him. I mean, he thinks he's in love with her. And also, he's like, you know, he's an addict at this point, right? I mean, he went there wanting coke. He's, like, really messed up. So that's a dangerous person. Combine the love that he thinks that he has for her and that she has for him, and him being an addict and everything they're saying to him, that was not a good scenario.
Yeah, and Vivian's like, Howard, get this guy out of here. I'm done with him. She like dismisses him like he's not even in the room. That had to be really hard for Thaddeus at this point. So he goes nuts and gets out of the chokehold and starts beating Howard with the cane. And then this comes back, dissolves into the future again, where Vivian and Gloria are talking.
Right.
So...
so this is what Vivian ends up telling her.
Yeah, this story. This right. is how she finds out. So Gloria just says none of this has anything to do with, and she just kind of trails off like she's right. There's nothing here that has anything to do with the murder of Ennis.
Well, right. She kept trying to, you know, find something, something to connect it. She's asking Vivian, do you think he could have sent somebody after him? But I mean, after all these years, that would just be nuts, right? And she kind of comes to the conclusion that this has nothing to do with it. Right. So what was the point of them going back and doing all this?
I don't know. The randomness of life. Like, we bump in, you know, what Howard says is kind of true. Like, you meet, you know, how did you meet your husband? You bumped into him somewhere. Who knows how you would have bumped? What if you didn't bump into him in the market? You know, what if you didn't meet, go, what you didn't go to the college you were going to go to, and you didn't meet the fiance that you got, or what if your mom didn't meet your dad? You know, it is pretty random. I don't know. I can't find anything more directly connected than that, but it's a profound thought.
Right. Nothing other than the fact that we find out how he gets his name. And also Vivian says something here that's kind of maybe interesting. She says that she's a bad person, but he wasn't a good person either.
Right.
And I don't think we saw that out of him. It's like we just kind of talked about a minute ago. They showed him as being a pretty clean-cut, decent person, it looked like, for all we saw. But what did maybe she see? Because why would she say that about him?
I don't know. I mean...
because he beat Howard senseless or something? Yeah,
put him in a coma for 35 years, whatever he's in.
Right.
You know, he's taking drugs. You know, he wasn't a choir boy.
Well, not after they got a hold of him anyway, was he?
Gloria's a little bit wrong when she says she muses, like, well, nothing has anything to do with this. Because it really does have everything to do with it. Like, if Thaddeus had not had this problem, he wouldn't have run away and gone to Eden Prairie. And he would have never crossed paths with Gloria's mother.
Right.
She would have never met Ennis.
And he certainly wouldn't have died that way. And he wouldn't have had the last name Stussy.
And more importantly, Michelle, I don't think she would have gotten on the plane and met Paul. Because I think Paul has to be the wild card in this somehow.
So surely, in some way, right? I mean, surely there's something about Paul.
So Gloria goes to the beach and just sits there and views the nature, the ocean. Beautiful scene. Just like gets charged up, gets kind of recuperates a little bit by sitting in this nature setting.
Right.
Thought that was cool.
Yeah, she clears her mind a little bit, I think.
And then we go back to Thaddeus in his room, escaping after pounding Howard with packing quickly and picking up the trophy, and realizes he has blood on his hands, and he throws up into the toilet. Right, and sees the name. That's how he got the name.
Yeah, well, yeah, they don't even show it with him. Then we go to Gloria, who drops that she's packing to leave in this exact same room, and she drops something. So she has to bend down and pick it up, and she sees it. And it's Dennis Stussy and Son is what's imprinted on the bowl of the toilet tank, but the D is kind of scraped off. I think that's why it was important that she stayed in the same room. Because this D was kind of worn away, maybe with an abrasive cleanser or something like that. So it looked like it said Ennis Stussy.
Yeah, it could have been. That's a good point. All right, so then she wakes up back on the plane to Minnesota. And what is this now? The android guy meets the Federation of Union of United Planets or something. 4.8 yep. million years makes you the oldest being in the universe. So the birth of planets, the death of worms, I've ridden on the tail of a comet. Now your service is complete. And so Mansky has to shut himself down. And this is a supposedly VM Varga's voice, shut himself down. And he turns off his own switch.
Yep. You've seen everything. You've done everything.
So... it's a wild guess from me as to what that might mean, especially if it's VM Varga's voice.
Yeah, really? Yeah.
I like that, though, that it's his voice. If it
sure,
is.
Sure.
So it kind of closes out with Gloria at the funeral parlor with Ennis and her son, in different capacities, of course. But it's very sad and somber. They leave and want to go to Arby's, and Donnie catches up and tries to join in. He, like, probably loves Arby's.
Right, Arby's is his thing, evidently.
So they got fingerprints off of on Ennis's body or something, and they are of Maurice Lefebvre, killed by air conditioner.
Yep.
And Gloria surmises, air conditioner in the winter? Why would anyone be working on their air conditioner in the winter? Which is a great right. point.
It is, and she's already not completely buying that.
Completely buying it being an accident?
I don't think so, yeah. I think something's telling her something at that point. I don't think she's going to let it drop, you know?
Pardon the pun.
Right.
Yeah, the only time you'd mess with your window air conditioner in the winter is if and I guess it would be a plausible excuse, like if the insulation around it got loose or the air was coming in and you were messing with it to fix it, and you're like, whoops, oh, shit, and it falls out, but...
Right, you might be stuffing a towel around it or something like that, but...
Yeah. But she says, we may solve this thing yet, and then drives away in the box with the switches in the back deck of her car, Michelle.
I know.
What is she going to do with that box?
I don't know. I think there was a whole lot of questions in this one. But it was kind of neat because Gloria says, well, since Maurice is dead already, we should go all out and have shakes and curly fries and really think about our next move. Because she was going to go, like, immediately to... find out about this Maurice Lefebvre, but
and that box was kinda, that box had to be in the room recently. That and there's no way that box was left in the room by Ennis 35 years ago in a working hotel room. And who set up the shoes to make it look scary?
And why?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get the shoes. There was a lot of questions in this, but I absolutely loved this episode. And I can't believe I did, because I missed the other characters too. But
what do you mean you missed them?
I missed them. I wanted to see what was going on with Emmett and Ray and Nikki and VM Varga and Cy and all of them. I wanted to see, and I feel like, you know, by the time we see them again, it's going to be a couple weeks that we're not going to have seen them at all or seen what was going on. But I missed them. I always miss the main characters when they go off and they show just one character like that. And usually it doesn't resonate really well with me. It's not my favorite kind of episode, but I really liked this one. It really made me think a lot.
Yeah, now it's funny now that you say that. I guess I miss them now, thinking about it now. But during the time of watching this, I didn't even think about them at all. I was just caught up in this.
Right.
I wasn't like wondering when Ewan McGregor was going to come back on. All right, Michelle, that's 303, The Law of Non-Contradiction. Next week is 304, The Narrow Escape Problem. Have you seen any of the previews for it?
Well, yeah, I saw where Nikki's telling somebody about the safety deposit box. She's like meeting up with some other guy, right? And she's telling him something about the safety deposit box, it looks like. The slip, I guess, that she found. So I don't know what she's doing with that. And I don't know if Ray even knew anything about it.
Some other guy, like a male suitor type guy, or what kind of guy?
I'm guessing somebody to help her find out something about this was my guess by looking at it. It was just like a 3-second little clip, you know?
Huh, but why wouldn't she have Ray help her?
Well, I don't know. Maybe he works in a bank or something. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know. Then we see VM Varga. He's saying that he feels that maybe they started off on the wrong foot. He's being kind of cheeky. Emmett is aghast that somebody wants something from him, and it's dinner time. And then we see Gloria. She's talking to Ray and just noticing his name, and she's looking into the murder of Ennis Stussy. So Gloria's sitting there talking to Ray at his desk, but looking at the last name Stussy. So that's kind of weird. And then we see Varga having dinner with Emmett and his family. He's sitting at the dinner table.
Emmett's with Varga's family? Or Varga's with Emmett?
Varga is with Emmett and Stella and his kids.
Stella!
I know. How do you ever say Stella without...
Well, he's got to get to know him. He's a business partner now.
I guess.
Come over for dinner, buddy.
Yep.
It was funny, on The Leftovers this week, Carrie Coon was not in that episode at all, and now she gets her own episode here, so we got kind of balanced out.
Well, maybe that's why.
I don't think they're in that close cahoots, but...
I haven't seen Leftovers this week. Haven't had a chance to watch it yet. I've only watched one.
Nobody's in it. Only Kevin's dad.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's crazy. Crazy, crazy, insane. All right, Michelle, I wish I had more answers for this one, but I guess I'm not too bothered by having the questions, so.
No, I loved it. I loved it. Every episode of Fargo makes me look forward to the next episode.
All right. Well, next week we got The Narrow Escape Problem. How do people reach you before that?
I'm on Twitter at Michelle from TN.
All right. And I'm at Scathing Tweets and West Coast Project. And Michelle, your podcasts are all on Tribal Rant.
Tribal Rant.
So yep. Till we compare notes for The Narrow Escape, have a great week.
Okay. You too, Mike.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.